ISIS because they're such accomplished lawyers who've received so many accolades. They can't claim to be, incapable of debating at my level. I'm sure they can. I have no doubt that they can. Hell, they may even be better debaters than me. Why won't they accept my challenge?
Why would you think that they wouldn't accept your challenge?
Oh, because Israel has no case. It's not because I'm a debate monster. That's not the reason. It's because even a child could win this debate on behalf of the Palestinians. It is so obvious that Israel is violating the human rights of the Palestinian people, that if you get into a debate with anybody who even has half an idea how to argue a case, you're going to lose. And they know this deep down inside. They'll never admit it, of course. You know, this is not the first time, by the way, David, I've challenged people who are, prolific, prominent defenders of Israel and Canada to a debate. And they systematically avoid the debate because they have no case.
I think you challenged Erwin Kotler.
Yes, Erwin Kotler, of course, ignored me. Erwin Kotler, the former Justice Minister of Canada, he won't even debate me. You'd think he would be able to defend the case of Israel. I challenged, some people over at B'nai B'rith. They didn't accept my challenge either. I repeat it here, David. Any lawyer in Canada who wants to take on the question in a debate with me about whether Israel is committing genocide, I'll debate you happily. Name the time and place, I'll be there.
I mean, it's remarkable when these kinds of encounters happen, as one did in 2016 at this international conference on Israel and Palestine and the rule of law that I co-coordinated in Winnipeg, and you were there, you presented. And at that session, David Matus was David Matus, he's the hero of, human rights law, widely respected paragon of human rights law in Canada, the venerable David Matus, who's a complete supporter of Israel, of course. He's a dyed-in-the-wool Zionist and, a decent man. But he came, he was the only pro-Israel advocate, that's the Department of Redundancy Department, in Canada. Oh, he was the most pro Zionist, the only one at this conference, and he sat on the stage with Michael Wink, and they had a conversation. And first, Matus presented, and Link presented, and they kind of went back and forth, and it was remarkable the contrast between the two, both of them known for their knowledge and their expertise in international humanitarian and human rights law, but hearing Matus say things that. Watching Michael Wink's face, Michael Wink was making his facial expressions were very enjoyable, grimacing as Matus said things. So it's always fascinating to watch these kinds of encounters. They don't happen very often.
Yeah, I just hasten to point out, David, that David Matus pleaded guilty to professional misconduct for providing legal services that he'd agreed he would no longer offer. This was, I believe, last year. He admitted at a hearing that he breached an undertaking with the Law Society of Manitoba to restrict his legal practice to acting as counsel to other lawyers. Interesting why he was required to make that undertaking. It's an unusual undertaking, telling the lawyer, you can't represent non-lawyers, you can only represent lawyers. I don't know why he had given that undertaking, but he violated it. This was a serious offense. I understand he was subject to suspension and fine. So, again, this is another example of how the legal profession, both in Canada and other Western countries, goes after people for the most innocuous reasons. However much he may have merited punishment for violating his undertaking to not to represent non-lawyers, the far worse offense that David Matus has committed is that for much, if not all, of his career, he has been an apologist for Israel's heinous crimes, including crimes against humanity. So if you're going to go after David Matus and punish him professionally, that's the main reason why you should do it. This other offense that he committed, even though it may well have merited punishment, pales in comparison to the lies he's told on behalf of Israel.
But this kind of brings us back to where we began, right? The distinction in people's minds between the difference in people's minds between violations of tariff law and international trade law and being aggressive economically and imposing tariffs, bringing us back to the horror days of the 1930s in terms of international tariff regimes versus concerns for the rules of war and the laws of war embodied in the Hague regulations and of the early 20th century in the Genocide Convention and the Fourth Geneva Convention, which are, it would seem to me, far more consequential, far more fundamental to the welfare of human societies and human life on Earth, right? Protecting people against genocide than protecting countries against, you know, punitive tariffs, as painful as they may be for people who struggle, that, you know, the latter matters, the former doesn't. You're free to violate the laws of war and commit genocide and apartheid and crimes against humanity with impunity, and the powerful countries of the world will deny it. They'll say, no, it's no violations are actually taking place, while the highest courts, international courts, International Court of Justice, International Criminal Court, no end of international legal experts, authorities, human rights organizations say Israel commits apartheid, Israel's committing genocide. You know, Canada and the United States and the UK and France and Germany, they all deny that vociferously, all the while supporting it, and the media doesn't report on it. And people don't want to debate it. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, the colloquial way to describe what you've just laid out is our priorities are screwed up. That's, as a society, you know, we've got it ass backwards. The things that should concern us the most are swept under the rug, and relatively innocuous offenses are, you know, paraded as some great sin, but only when they, you know, impact people in positions of power or challenge the authority of those in positions of power, as is happening with these tariffs. You know, I like to say, David, that, you know, our basic sense of human decency should be our guide. Deep down, most of us have just a basic, fundamental, innate sense of what is right and what is wrong. Those should be the things that we prioritize. Any decent-minded human being would say that shooting Palestinian children in the head, any children in the head, is outrageously wrong. You know, that destroying hospitals is beyond the pale, that killing civil defense workers, massacring over 100 journalists is inexcusable. It's just basic human decency. And at the elite level, the level of our economic, political, and media elites, as far as I can tell, David, there is no basic sense of human decency. Somehow along the way, these people lost their most fundamental morality. And it behooves us to remove them from positions of authority, or else we're all toast. You know, we are all finished if we allow these people to remain in power.
What do you think of Mark Carney?
Mark Carney is, you know, possibly worse than Trudeau. Mark Carney appointed a fanatical Zionist, a lunatic of Zionism, Marco Mendocino, to be his chief of staff, an extraordinarily important position. Mark Carney has, you know, followed the footsteps of Trudeau in articulating during this election campaign empty words of sympathy for the Palestinians, but he has not imposed a single sanction on Israel. He has not proposed an arms embargo upon Israel. He, in fact, is avoiding any real discussion about Israel at his speaking engagements. I've seen multiple videos of people, Eve Engler is one of them, but others, you know, calling him out when he's out in the campaign trail speaking about some, you know, unrelated matter to denounce Israel's crimes, and he refuses to do so. So, I mean, he's a banker as well. You know, the man worked at Goldman Sachs for 12 years. When he left, he was, I think, the head of investment. I used to represent Goldman Sachs, okay, when I was a New York lawyer. And I'm not saying anything here that isn't public knowledge. The people in Mark Carney's position at Goldman Sachs, the one that he held when he left, make enormous sums of money, gargantuan sums of money. And then he went on to become the governor of the Bank of Canada and then the governor of the Bank of England. And in both of those institutions, he did everything that he could to protect and enrich banks, big banks. You know, and this is very concerning to me that we are now about to be led by a Goldman Sachs banker. Emmanuel Macron is a banker. Kyriakos Mitsotakis, the president, the prime minister of Greece, is a banker. Italy was ruled by two former Goldman Sachs bankers in the last 15 years, Mario Monti and Mario Draghi, who was also the head of the ECB. I could go on and on. Frederick Merz was the guy who just won the German election and is going to be the next chancellor, was the head of BlackRock Germany. What the hell's going on here? Why don't people sort of wake up and say, the bankers are taking over our governments? It's obvious. And so this heinous phenomenon has come to Canada.
My father was a banker.
Yeah, but he didn't run the country. So
that's
unless
sure.
I missed something.
That's for
if
sure.
They want to be bankers, let them be bankers. But why are they qualified to run the country? Because they were bankers, run a bank. But you know, doesn't mean you're qualified to be the prime minister.
My father, I'm sure he would not have wanted to run the United States. But that's another story. Dimitri Lascaris, why have you resigned or withdrawn from your law firm? Tell me about that.
So the firm's name is Calogley and Myers. I was a partner in a law firm in Ontario called Siskins up until 2016. When I left to focus on doing pro bono work, including, for example, the case in which I represented you, and I continue to represent you, this endless case. And also I wanted to do independent journalism. But then a young lawyer by the name of Serge Kologlian, who had been one of my associates when I was a partner at Siskins, struck out and started his own law firm around 2020. And he was still relatively young, and he wanted a senior lawyer to be, you know, more or less a counsel to him. And so he asked me to join his firm, and I did on two conditions. One is that I didn't have to work more than part-time, and the second is that I could take on any pro bono matter that I wanted. And Serge was perfectly aware about, you know, my political positions at that point in time. And so he had no problem with them. The firm expanded, brought in a couple other partners. And then gradually over time, even though I didn't talk much about the fact that I was, a member of this firm, over time, they began to receive complaints about my advocacy for Palestinians, my position on the Ukraine war. And then most recently, something that caused a huge uproar was that I attended the funeral of Hassan Nasrallah, the former Secretary General of Hezbollah, earlier this year, in my capacity as a journalist. I went there as an accredited member of the press. I was given a press pass by the Lebanese authorities. I stood in a section that was full of international media and reported from there. And this sent a lot of Zionists, including lawyers, Zionist lawyers, into a state of frenzy, and they began to inundate the firm with complaints. And finally, I got to a point, they didn't ask me to leave. It got to a point where I said to them, look, I really, it bothers me deeply that you're having to put up with this. I don't want to embroil you in my, in the backlash that I typically receive from people who disagree with my political points of view. I think it would just be easier for everyone if I left the firm.
But I mean, what's the problem? I mean, if people, they don't want you at this law firm, they don't want you representing them, and they wouldn't ask you to represent them. And presumably anybody you represented on behalf of the firm would have, asked that you be their counsel. And other attorneys at this law firm can proceed as they wish. In a sense, you're affiliated with the firm, but why would these outside forces not want you to be a part of this firm that is perfectly within its rights to pursue whatever cases it wants and distribute them to whichever attorneys are the most appropriate to deal with them?
It's this typical, Zionist tactics. They want to harm economically and reputationally anybody who supports the Palestinian cause and has any kind of a public profile. And and one of the ways they do that is by pressuring their employers and their business associates to to separate themselves from, advocates of Palestine. If they can't get me, they've been trying to come, destroy me. And one thing I want to say is, David, that event that you organized, that wonderful event with David Matus and Michael Link up on the stage back in Winnipeg, I have very painful memories of that event because that was the weekend when the Prime Minister and the official, the leader of the official opposition smeared me as an anti-Semite because of criticisms I had leveled against Anthony Housefather and Michael Levitt. So I've been dealing with this for years, and I know from experience that if they can't cause me to shut up, and that clearly they're not going to do that, then they're going to go after people who associate themselves with me in a business capacity or in any other capacity. And that's what they were trying to do. There was a character called Amir Epstein, who is the executive director of this far-right, hateful Islamophobic organization based in Toronto called Tafsik, Tafsik. Check out its social media commentary. You'll see what I'm talking about. He wrote a letter, and he claims to have a law degree from some Australian university I never heard of before. But he wrote a letter in which he said, basically, if you don't disassociate yourself from Lascaris, we will assume that you agree with his positions, and we'll hold you accountable. I'm paraphrasing what he wrote. He was essentially threatening the law firm with, harm to its business, and he's not the only one who did that. Many other people did that. I don't want them to be harmed by my advocacy.
Huh, so are you now you're still licensed to
I'm a member of the bar.
you're
Member
a
of the
member of the bar in the
province.
province of Ontario and Quebec?
No, only in Ontario. I was a member of the New York bar, but I retired from the New York bar a few years ago because I wasn't practicing.
So you're free to take up cases as an individual.
Sure, I can represent anybody in Canada, and I'll continue to do that. But I should also point out that they've come after me personally. I've had four complaints filed against me with the Law Society of Ontario, which admitted me in 2004, by people who are obviously Zionists. At least two of them, I have no doubt you would recognize their names if I told you what they were, but I'm not at liberty to mention their names. The Law Society precludes me from identifying people who file complaints against me, which is fine. I'm not going to do that.
And these are
But
active complaints before the Law Society.
no, they filed the complaints, and the procedures of the Law Society of Ontario are that every complaint filed against a lawyer is subjected first to a preliminary screening, okay, by a disciplinary officer appointed by the Law Society. They have a group of people who do this. They do this preliminary screening. And if they decide that the complaint is meritorious, they will then send it to a disciplinary tribunal. And then I will have to answer the complaint, and there may end up being, a hearing where I have to defend my actions. Okay, but it has to get beyond the initial screening to go to a disciplinary tribunal. All four of these complaints that were filed against me were dismissed by the screening officer. So none of them went to a disciplinary tribunal. They're all over. They're done. But the point is that, for the I'd never had a complaint filed against me with the Law Society of Ontario before October 7th, 2023. All the years that I practiced, all of a sudden, I've got multiple complaints against me from people who are, outspoken Zionists, claiming that I'm not fit to practice law. Why? Because I criticize a genocidal regime and defend its victims. And that says something really awful about, the legal profession. Two of the people, the four complainants, were lawyers. One of them is a very prominent lawyer. And it's just disgusting that they would come after fellow members of the bar and try to impose upon them some kind of disciplinary penalty, professional penalty, because they're defending the victims of a genocide and condemning the perpetrator of the genocide. This is why I attach that title to my most recent report about, Tariq Haddad. The legal profession is embarrassing itself again. It's unbelievable how Canada's prominent lawyers have done nothing in the face of this genocide. Many of them have come to Israel's defense, but not one of these prominent, highly paid Bay Street lawyers has uttered a peep of criticism of Israel or a peep of sympathy for Palestinians, as far as I know. I've not seen, and I followed their commentary pretty closely, I've not seen a single statement defending Palestinians from these people.
Dmitry Lascaris, last question. will the Palestinian people escape genocide or survive genocide? Because Israel is arguably committing genocide. Plausibly, the International Court of Justice has said, so genocide is now underway. What's going to happen? Briefly, we don't have too much time left.
Well, there's no question they're going to survive the genocide because most Palestinians are not within the jurisdiction of Israel. You know, there are Palestinians, millions of them living in Jordan, in neighboring countries, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Egypt. You know, there are Palestinian refugees all over the Middle East. Israel's not going to succeed in killing all of them. I don't think it's going to succeed in killing, you know, the Palestinians living in the occupied territories, although the way things are going, David, you know, it's entirely conceivable that they will kill hundreds of thousands of them and maybe even millions. The West has given Israel an absolute carte blanche. They've sent a message to Israel. It's loud and it's clear, and that is, no matter what you do, we will protect you, we will arm you, we will fund you, and we will prevent you from being held accountable. And Israel got the memo, and it is now carrying out a killing spree of shocking proportions. The audacity of it blows my mind. But it can't kill all the Palestinians. And even if it got away with effectively ethnically cleansing, I don't think it will. I would be shocked. The occupied territories, there are still going to be millions of Palestinians out there who are going to demand that they return to their homeland, and one day they will. And it's going to happen in our lifetimes. You know, if you and I live to be the average age of a Canadian male, I have every confidence in our lifetimes we will see the rebirth of Palestine.
Dimitri Lascaris is a lawyer, a journalist, founder of the Reason to Resist podcast, and an activist based in Montreal and in Kalamata, Greece. And we'll link to Reason to Resist at greenplanetmonitor.net. Dimitri Lascaris, thank you so much for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor once again.
And thank you, David, for all you do. You do incredible journalism. And, you know, you've been very kind in remarking on my journalism, but yours is first rate. And I've even learned some things from watching you, you know, and I wish that people, anybody listening to this conversation, should spread the news far and wide about the outstanding journalism that David Kattenberg's doing.
Thank you so much, Dimitri. You take care.
Take care, brother.
Dimitri Lascaris is a lawyer, activist, journalist, and polemicist based in Montreal, Canada, and Kalamata, Greece. We'll link to Dimitri's Reason to Resist platform at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia. We are diverse, independent, and yours.
I heard you woke up. blood.